She had a softish, round, mocha-coloured body. Beautiful jiggly breasts that dragged the men's eyes along with them. I think I remember some story about them all getting drunk and swimming naked in the pool one summer's night. So very 70s of them. She and Alice were all bright and giggly and swilling champagne, and I was a stiff cardboard cutout. My laugh was forced. It seemed to happen so quickly that she knew my sister better than me. Gina's kids were IVF pregnancies. She asked lots of expertly interested questions. She would sympathetically rub my hand, very touchy-feely type, soft, sweet-smelling kisses on each cheek every time you saw her. I once heard Roger say to her, "Oh, I do like the way you European ladies kiss hello." Gina had said she understood exactly what I was going through, and quite probably she did, except that it was all behind her now. I could tell her memories were rose-colored because of the happy ending. You'd think I would have been inspired by her. She was a success story. She'd traveled across the infertility minefield and got safely to the other side. But I found her patronizing. It's easy to think the minefield wasn't that bad once you're safely over watching other people get blown up. She couldn't imagine her children not existing. They were too real, filling up her mind. I felt like I couldn't complain to Alice because Gina was probably in her ear telling her, with the benefit of experience, that it wasn't that bad and I was just whinging and being melodramatic. One night I called Alice to tell her that we'd lost another baby. I had terrible nausea with that pregnancy. I gagged every time I cleaned my teeth. I had to run out of a cinema because the smell of the woman's perfume sitting next to me, opium, combined with her popcorn made me retch. I'd thought for sure it must be a sign that this one was going to be the lucky one. Ha ha. It meant nothing. When I rang Alice, she answered the phone laughing. Gina was in the background yelling out something about pineapple. They were inventing cocktails for some school function. Of course Alice stopped laughing when I told her the news and put on her sad voice, but she couldn't quite stamp out the leftover laughter. I felt like the boring sister with yet another boring miscarriage, ruining the good times for everybody with her slightly disgusting gynecological bad news. Alice must have signaled to Gina because her laughter stopped like a switch had been turned off. I told her not to worry, that we could talk later, and hung up fast. Then I threw the phone across the room, and it smashed a beautiful vase that I'd bought in Italy when I was 20, and I lay on the couch and screamed into a cushion. I still grieve for that vase. Alice didn't call me the next day, and the day after that was when Madison ran through the French doors. So we were distracted and busy at the hospital worrying about her. My miscarriage got forgotten in between cocktails with Gina and Madison. Alice never even mentioned it. I wondered if she forgot. I think that's when the coldness started between us. Yes, I know, petty and childish, but there you have it. Chapter 17. Franny's letter to Phil. I'm tucked up in bed again, Phil. It's been a long day. Who should be sitting next to me again in the dining room at dinner tonight? You guessed it, Mr. Moustache. The man seems to have taken a shine to me. I don't know why, because we have absolutely nothing in common, and we appear to disagree on everything. He was talking about his moustache tonight. He said that he'd always wanted a moustache, but that his wife had never let him grow one because it would be too ticklish when she kissed him. Too much information, as the young people say. He said that after she died, he'd cultivated this beautiful specimen. He asked what I thought of his moustache, and I said I thought it was most unattractive. He roared with laughter. Then he asked how I'd managed to escape the shackles of marriage. Do you mind? You will be astonished to hear that I told him about you. Not the whole story. I just said that I was pretty much an old maid when I finally met Mr. Wright. I said that we were engaged to be married, but unfortunately the wedding never took place. It wasn't meant to be. Mr. Moustache was uncharacteristically quiet. Then he said, "I'm sorry to hear that, Franny," and touched my hand, and for a moment I couldn't speak. He had an unexpectedly gentle touch. Of course, only a few minutes after that, he was regaling the whole table with the most tasteless, dirty joke you have ever heard. Nick! Alice sat bolt upright, her heart racing, her breath shallow. She felt about the bed with her hand for Nick, to wake him up and tell him about the nightmare, although the details were already slipping away and starting to seem silly. Something to do with a tree? A huge tree, branches black against a stormy sky. Nick! Normally he woke up immediately when she had a nightmare, his voice gruff with sleep, automatically soothing her. It's okay, it's just a dream, just a bad dream. Part of her mind would always think, he's going to make such a great dad. She patted at the sheets. He must have gone to get a glass of water. Or had he not come to bed yet? Nick is not here, Alice. He lives somewhere else. He flew back from Portugal this morning and you weren't there to meet him. Maybe Gina picked him up at the airport. Oh, and you kissed that school principal today, remember? Can you just please remember your life, you fool? She snapped on the bedside lamp, threw back the sheets and got out of bed. There was no way she was going back to sleep now. Right. She ran her palms down her nighty. It was a sleeveless, shimmery, oyster-coloured silk. It must have cost a fortune. It was just so stupid that she didn't remember buying it. She'd had enough. She wanted to remember everything, right now. She went into the bathroom and found the bottle of perfume she'd used at the hospital. She sprayed it in big, lavish swoops and sniffed deeply. She was going to run and jump straight into that vortex of memory. The perfume assaulted her nostrils, making her feel a bit sick. She waited for the images of the last 10 years to fill her mind, but all she could see were the smiling, strange faces from tonight's party, and Dominic's liquid brown eyes, and her mother smiling coyly at Roger, and the disappointed lines around Elizabeth's mouth. All these recent memories were too fresh and confusing. That was the problem. There was no space for all the old memories. She sat down on the cold bathroom tiles and hugged her knees in close. All those people tonight, trooping happily into her house, helping themselves to glasses of champagne and tiny canapés from white-aproned caterers, who had turned up at 5 p.m., taking over the kitchen, blandly efficient. Standing around her backyard in little groups, high heels sinking into the grass. Alice, they said so familiarly, kissing her on both cheeks. There was a lot of kissing of both cheeks in 2008. How are you? Hairstyles were smoother and flatter than in 1998. It made everyone's head seem comically smaller. People talked about petrol prices. How could there be anything to say on such a boring topic? Property prices, development applications, and some political scandal. They talked about their children, Emily, Harry, Isabel, as if Alice knew them intimately. There were hilarious jokes about some school excursion she'd apparently attended, where things had gone hilariously wrong. There were serious, lowered voices about some teacher everybody hated. They talked to her about jazz ballet lessons, saxophone lessons, swimming lessons, the school band, the school fete, the tuck shop, the extension class for gifted and talented kids. None of it made any sense. The conversations were so detailed, so many names and dates and times and acronyms, the PE something class, the WE something teacher. On two occasions, different women hissed the unfamiliar word, Botox, in Alice's ear as another woman walked by. Alice couldn't be sure if it was a contemptuous insult or an envious compliment. Dominic hovered unobtrusively close by, explaining to people that she wasn't quite herself after her accident, that she really should be in bed. Typical Alice to soldier on, they said. Was it typical? How strange. Normally she loved the excuse to put herself to bed. It didn't seem to matter all that much that she didn't recognize a single person. Nodding and smiling seemed enough to keep the conversations flowing, while Alice kept being distracted by things in her own backyard. Was that a vegetable garden in the corner? There was a swing set creaking gently in the evening breeze. Had the Sultana slid down that slippery dip into her arms? Now Alice traced her fingertips along the grouting of the white bathroom tiles. She and Nick had done a tiling course together in preparation for this job, number 46 on their impossible dream list. She didn't remember doing it. It was possible she had lost thousands of memories. Was Nick in bed with Gina right now? Gina's name had come up at the party. It had been awkward. Alice had been talking, or more accurately listening, to a woman wearing distractingly large diamond earrings, and a man who was obsessively interested in getting another mini samosa, and was watching the caterer's plates with an eagle eye. The topic was homework and how much of a strain it was on the parents. It's 3 a.m., and I'm sticking paddle pop sticks together to make Erin's early settler's house, and I tell you, something inside me just snaps. The earring woman clicked her fingers and her diamonds flashed. I can imagine, Alice had murmured, although she couldn't. Why hadn't this Erin kid done her own homework? Or why hadn't they done it together? Alice imagined laughing happily with a sweet daughter while they glued together paddle pop sticks and drank hot chocolate. Also, Alice was great at that sort of thing. Her kid's early settler's house would be the best in the class.
Well, they've got to learn discipline, haven't they? Isn't that the point of homework? Said the man. Hey, excuse me, are they samosas you've got there?
Oh, kebabs.
Anyway, these days you can just Google anything.
Did he say giggle?
Goggle?
Alice's head ached.
You can't Google an early settler's cottage made out of paddle pop sticks into existence. Anyway, I bet you don't have to help them with their homework, do you?
The woman had given Alice a womanly men look, which Alice had tried to return. She was sure Nick would have helped.
I'm sure Laura has it all done by the time you get home from work.
I remember hearing Gina Boyle say once that she thought homework should be...
The woman had stopped herself mid-sentence with an exaggerated wince of embarrassment.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alice. How insensitive of me.
The man had given Alice a brief brotherly hug around the shoulders.
It's been so hard for you. Oh, look, let me get you a samosa.
Alice had been horrified. Did everyone know that Nick had cheated on her with Gina? Was it public knowledge in this strange, cliquey circle? Dominic had appeared from nowhere, gently extricating her. She was starting to rely on him. She even found herself looking for him in the crowd, thinking vaguely to herself, "Where's Dominic?" While at the same time imagining telling Nick the story. "So this guy acted like my boyfriend for the whole night. What do you think of that?"
Elizabeth and Ben had come to the party too, because Alice had told Elizabeth she would have a panic attack if she didn't come.
Ben was even huger and grislier than the man Alice had remembered meeting. He looked like a woodchopper who had escaped from a fairy tale picture book, and he was particularly conspicuous among all the other smooth-faced men with their neat button-down shirts and neat gym-toned shoulders. He seemed fond of Alice. He told her he'd been thinking a lot about their conversation the other day, and then he said, "Oh, but of course, you probably don't even remember it," and slapped himself lightly on the side of the head. Elizabeth had folded her lips together and looked the other way.
"What did we talk about?" Alice had asked.
"Not now," Elizabeth had said tersely.
Elizabeth and Ben hadn't circulated much. They talked a lot to Dominic, whom they didn't appear to have met before. It was strange, seeing Elizabeth cradling one drink and sticking to Ben's side. She used to march her way from person to person at parties as if it were her duty to talk to every single person. Actually, the funny thing was that she thought she could have managed that party even without Elizabeth or Dominic, or even Nick there to help her. Even though it had been surreal and dreamlike, meeting all those strange people who knew her name and intimate details about her health, one woman had tried to drag her into a corner to continue a conversation from a few weeks ago that appeared to be about Alice's pelvic floor. She hadn't ever felt that normal feeling of party panic. She seemed to know instinctively how to stand and what to do with her arms and face. She could feel herself being gracious and vibrant, actually telling people the story of how she'd fallen over at the gym and thought she was 10 years younger and pregnant with her first child. The words rolled smoothly. She made eye contact with everyone in the circle. She was delivering an anecdote. It appeared she had become very normal and accomplished now that she was nearly 40. Maybe it was because she looked so good that she'd felt so confident. She'd chosen a blue dress from her wardrobe with detailed embroidery around the neckline and hem.
"Oh, you always have the most gorgeous clothes, Alice darling," Kate Harper, the woman from the lift, had said.
Kate's rounded vowels had become even rounder the more she drank, so by midnight she sounded like the queen. Alice couldn't stand her. The party had finished up around 1 a.m. Dominic had been one of the last to go, kissing her chastely on the cheek and saying he'd call tomorrow. There didn't seem to have been any question about him staying the night, so maybe their relationship hadn't progressed to that point. He was a very nice man, someone she would happily recommend as a single man to a friend. But the thought of taking her clothes off in front of him was laughable. Then again, maybe he had just been discreet because he knew she had begged Elizabeth and Ben to stay the night. She hadn't liked the idea of waking up in this strange new world without company. Maybe they had quite an active sex life. She shuddered. Less than 24 hours till she saw Nick and the children and everything would finally fall into place. The bathroom floor was becoming cold. She stood up and surveyed her tired, thin face in the mirror. "Who have you become, Alice, love?" She walked back into the bedroom and considered trying to go back to sleep, but she knew it would be impossible. Hot milk was the answer. Of course, it wasn't the answer at all. It never cured her insomnia, but the ritual of it, and the feeling that you were doing something that the magazines always recommended for insomnia, was soothing and helped pass the time. The door to the spare room was closed as she crept down the hallway. She had been pleasantly surprised to discover a spare room, previously one of their many junk rooms, all set up with a double bed, chest of drawers, and spare towels. "Was I expecting someone to stay?" she'd asked Elizabeth. "You always keep it like this," Elizabeth had said. "You're very organized, Alice." That hardness had come back in her voice. Alice didn't know what it meant. She was starting to feel irritated by Elizabeth. She crept down the carpeted hallway and nearly missed her footing at the top of the stairs, grabbing for the banister. Maybe it would be convenient if she fell and banged her head again. It might bring back all her memories. She walked down the stairs, clinging to the banister. As she got to the bottom, she saw that there was a light on in the kitchen. "Hi," she said. "Oh, hi." Elizabeth was standing at the microwave. "Hot milk," she said. "Want some?" "Yes, please." "Not that it ever really cures my insomnia." "No, me either." Alice leaned back against the counter and watched Elizabeth pour milk into a second mug. She was wearing a huge man's T-shirt that must belong to Ben. It made Alice feel prissy in her long silk nightie. "How you feeling?" asked Elizabeth. "How's your memory?" "Nothing new," said Alice. "I still don't remember anything about the children or the divorce. Although I've worked out it's got something to do with Gina." Elizabeth looked at her with surprise. "What do you mean?" "It's okay, you don't need to protect me," said Alice. "I've worked out that he had an affair with her." "Nick had an affair with Gina?"
"Well, didn't he? Everybody seems to know about it."
"It's news to me."
Elizabeth looked genuinely shocked. Alice said nonchalantly, "He's probably in bed with her now." The microwave bell dinged, but Elizabeth ignored it. She said, "I really doubt that, Alice."
"Why?"
Elizabeth paused and then looked her in the eye.
"Because she's dead," she said.
Chapter 18. Gina was dead?
"Oh," said Alice. She paused.
"I didn't kill her, did I? In a fit of jealous rage? Although I guess I'd be in jail, but maybe I got away with it."
Elizabeth laughed in a scandalous way. "No, you didn't kill her." She frowned.
"Are you saying you remember Nick having an affair with Gina?"
"Not exactly," admitted Alice. It had seemed so clear. She brightened. "That's why everyone had seemed sympathetic when Gina's name came up, because she was dead. There had been no affair at all. Now she was filled with relief and guilty love for Nick."
"Of course you didn't, darling. I never really suspected you, not for a second."
"And if there had been no affair, maybe Gina had been quite nice. So it was sort of terrible that she was dead." Elizabeth took the mugs of milk out of the microwave and carried them over to the coffee table, switching on a lamp.
The helium balloons that Dominic had blown up were still hovering silently. Two half-empty glasses of champagne sat on the windowsill, along with a pile of gnawed sticks from the chicken kebabs. Alice sat cross-legged on the leather couch, stretching her nightie over her knees.
"How did Gina die?" she asked.
"It was an accident." Elizabeth put her finger in her milk and stirred it around, avoiding Alice's eyes. "A car accident, I guess. About a year ago."
"Was I upset?"
"She was your best friend. I think you were devastated." Elizabeth took a big mouthful of her milk and put the mug down quickly.
"Ow, too hot."
"Devastated. Such a big, sweeping word." Alice took a sip of her milk and burnt her own tongue. It was so peculiar to think of being devastated by this strange woman's death. Yet apparently perfectly accepting of her divorce. She had no experience with devastation. Nothing that terrible had ever happened to her. Her dad had died when she was 6, but she mostly just remembered a feeling of confusion. Her mother had told her once that Alice had worn an old jumper of her dad's for weeks and weeks after he died and refused to take it off, kicking and screaming when Franny finally pulled it off over her head. Alice didn't remember that at all. Instead, she remembered how at the afternoon tea, after the funeral, she'd got told off by one of her mum's tennis friends for sticking her fingers in the cheesecake, and how Elizabeth had been doing it too, even more than she was, but she didn't get into trouble. Instead of remembering grief and devastation, she remembered the terrible injustice of the cheesecake. There had been that night before her wedding when she had found herself crying in bed over the fact that her dad wasn't alive to walk her down the aisle. She had been perplexed by the sudden tears and thought that maybe she was just nervous about the next day. She worried that they were fake tears because she thought she should feel that way when in fact she couldn't even imagine what it would be like to have a father. And at the same time, she'd felt pleased because maybe it meant part of her did remember her dad and did still miss him. And then she'd cried harder, remembering how whenever he was shaving in the bathroom, he'd squeeze a whole lot of delicious, creamy foam into her outstretched hand so she could smear it all over her face, and wasn't that cute and touching? And she really hoped the hairdresser got her fringe right the next day, because when she messed it up, she looked like a wombat. And there you had it. She was a horribly superficial person, actually more worried about her hair than her dead father. She had finally fallen asleep in a lather of emotion, which she didn't know whether to attribute to her father or her hair. Now, apparently, she had experienced real grown-up grief for a woman called Gina.
"You were there," said Elizabeth quietly.
"Pardon? I was where?"
"You saw Gina's accident. You were driving along behind her. It must have been terrible for you. I can't even imagine..."
"On the corner of Rawson and King Streets?" interrupted Alice.
"Yes. Do you remember?"
"Not really. I think I just remember the feeling of it. It's happened twice now that I've got all panicky, nightmarish feelings when I see that corner."
Would those feelings stop now that she knew what they meant?
She didn't know if she wanted to remember seeing someone killed in front of her. They drank their milk in silence for a few seconds. Alice reached up for one of the dangling strings of the balloons and pulled upon it. She watched it bob about and remembered again those pink bouquets of balloons floating angrily about in a stormy sky.
"Pink balloons," she said to Elizabeth. "I remember pink balloons and this terrible feeling of grief. Is that something to do with Gina?"
"That was at her funeral," said Elizabeth. "You and Michael, that's her husband, organized for balloons to be released at the graveyard. It was very beautiful. Very sad." Alice tried to imagine herself talking about balloons with a bereaved man called Michael.
Michael.
That was the name on that business card in her wallet. Michael Boyle, the physiotherapist from Melbourne, must be Gina's husband. That's why he'd written about happier times on the back of his business card. It was all very simple.
"Did Gina die before Nick and I separated?" asked Alice.
"Yes, I think about 6 months before. You've had a pretty hard year."
"Sounds like it."
"I'm sorry," said Elizabeth.
"Don't be. Alice looked up guiltily, worried she'd look like she was filled with self-pity. I don't even remember Gina, or the divorce. Well, you're going to have to see that neurologist, said Elizabeth, but she spoke without conviction, as if she couldn't be bothered pushing the point. They sat in silence for a while, except for the intermittent gurgling sounds of the fish tank. Am I meant to be feeding those fish? Asked Alice. I don't know, said Elizabeth. Actually, I think they're Tom's responsibility. I think nobody else is allowed to have anything to do with them. Tom, the fair-haired little boy with a snuffly voice on the phone. She felt terrified at the thought of meeting him. He was in charge of fish. He had responsibilities and opinions. All three children would have opinions. They'd have opinions on Alice. They might not even like her that much. Maybe she was too strict, or maybe she embarrassed them, wore the wrong clothes when she picked them up from school. Maybe they preferred Nick. Maybe they blamed her for driving Nick away. She said, "What are they like?" "The fish?" "No, the children." "Oh, well, they're great." "But tell me about them properly. Describe their personalities." Elizabeth opened her mouth and shut it again. "I feel stupid telling you about your children. You know them so much better than me." "But I don't even remember giving birth to them." "I know, it's just so hard to believe. You look exactly like yourself. I feel like any second you'll get your memory back and then you'll be saying, 'Oh, please, don't tell me about my children.'" "For heaven's sakes," said Alice. "Okay, okay," Elizabeth held up her hands. "I'll have a go. So, Madison. Well, Madison is..." She stopped and said, "Mum would do a much better job of this than me. She sees her children all the time. You should ask her." "But what do you mean? You know my children, don't you?" I thought you'd know them better than anyone. You bought me my very first present for the baby. Tiny socks." Elizabeth had been the first person Alice had called after she and Nick had laid out all those positive pregnancy tests on the coffee table. She had been so excited. She'd turned up with champagne, for Nick and me, not you, a copy of What to Expect When You're Expecting, and the socks. Elizabeth said, "Did I? I don't remember that." She put down her mug and picked up a framed photo from the table next to her. "I used to see the children all the time when they were little. I adored them. I still do adore them, of course. It's just that you're all so busy. The children have so many activities. They've all got swimming lessons, Olivia has ballet, Tom plays soccer, and Madison plays hockey. And the birthday parties. They're always going to someone's birthday party. Their social lives are amazing. I remember when they were little, I always knew exactly the right thing to get them for their birthdays. They'd rip off the paper in a frenzy. Now I have to ring you, and you tell me exactly where to go and what to ask for. Or else you just buy it yourself and I give you the money. And then you make the children send me a thank you card. Dear Auntie Libby, thank you so much for my blah blah." "A thank you card?" repeated Alice. "Yes, I know, it's teaching them good manners and everything, but I sort of hate those thank you cards. I always imagine the kids groaning and having to be forced into writing them. It makes me feel like an elderly aunt." "Oh, sorry. No, I can't believe I complained about thank you cards. I've become a bitter old hag. Have you noticed?" "It sounds more like I've become..." Alice didn't know how to describe the person it seemed she'd become. "Insufferable?" "Anyway," said Elizabeth dismissively, "your children." "Well, Madison is just Madison," she smiled fondly. "Madison is just Madison." There was a whole world of memories in that sentence. If that world were lost to Alice forever, it would be unbearable. "Mum always says, 'Where did we get her from?'" said Elizabeth. "Okay," said Alice, "this really wasn't helping much. Well, ever since she was a baby, she's always been so intense. She feels everything very deeply. On Christmas Eve, she'd become almost feverish with excitement, but then she couldn't stand it when Christmas was over. You'd find her sobbing in a corner because she had to wait a whole year for Christmas to come again. What else? She's accident prone. She ran through those French doors last year and had to have 42 stitches. It was very traumatic. A lot of blood. Apparently, Tom called an ambulance and Olivia fainted. I didn't know it was possible for a 5-year-old to faint. But Olivia has a blood phobia. Well, she did. I don't know if she still got it. Actually, didn't she get all excited about becoming a nurse for a while there? When Mum bought her that nurse's uniform. Alice just looked at her. I'm sorry, said Elizabeth, flustered. I can't imagine how weird this must feel, and I keep forgetting. Alice said, tell me more about the Sultana. Madison. Madison likes to cook, said Elizabeth. Well, I assume she still does. I believe she's been a bit moody lately. She used to make her own recipes. They were good, too. Except the kitchen always looked like a bomb had exploded, and she wasn't so good at the cleaning up part. Also, she was a bit of a prima donna about her cooking. If the recipe didn't turn out exactly the way she wanted, she'd cry. I once saw her throw this triple-layer chocolate cake she'd spent hours decorating in the bin. You went ballistic. I did? Alice tried to readjust yet again to this new picture of herself. She never got angry. She was more of a sulker. Well, apparently you'd gone on some special shopping trip to find exactly the right ingredients for this cake, so I don't really blame you. Madison sounds like one of the flakes, said Alice. It had never occurred to her before that Nick's sister's genes could infiltrate her child. She had always assumed that if she had a daughter, it would be a miniature version of herself, a fresh new Alice she could improve upon, maybe with Nick's eyes thrown in for interest. No, she's not like the flakes, said Elizabeth definitely. She's just Madison. Alice pressed her palms to her stomach and thought about how fiercely she and Nick had loved the Sultana. It had been such clean, simple, almost narcissistic love. Now the Sultana ran through glass doors and threw cakes in the bin and made Alice ballistic. It was all so much more complex and chaotic than she'd ever imagined. And Tom, what's he like? He's smart, said Elizabeth, and surprisingly witty at times. He's a suspicious kid. You can't put anything over him. He goes and checks it up on the internet. He gets obsessed with things and learns everything there is to know about them. It was dinosaurs for a while, and then roller coasters. I don't know what he's into at the moment. He does really well at school, he gets awards, and he's class captain, that sort of thing. That's good, said Alice. It was probably a relief after Madison. What do you mean? Oh, well, it's just that Madison has always had problems at school. Behavioral problems, you call them. Right. But I think you've got it all under control. I haven't heard of any dramas for a while. Dramas. Alice had a life with dramas. And then there's Olivia, said Elizabeth. She's just one of those children everyone adores. When we took her out when she was a baby, people used to stop you in the street to compliment you. Even serious middle-aged businessmen rushing along to meetings would smile when they saw Olivia sitting in the stroller. It was like being with a celebrity, heads turning everywhere. And she's still so cute. We keep waiting for her to turn into a monster, but she doesn't. She's very loving, maybe too loving. I remember her squatting down in the kitchen saying, "Hello, little fella." And we all looked down and saw she was trying to pat a cockroach. Mum nearly dropped dead on the spot. Elizabeth stopped talking and yawned enormously. "You'd probably describe them differently," she said, and her tone was defensive. "You're their mother." Alice was thinking about the first time she'd set eyes on Nick. She was wearing a striped apron, sitting on a high stool at a long counter, ready to learn Thai cooking. Her friend Sophie was meant to be there, but she'd twisted her ankle and missed the first class. Nick came in late with a girl who Alice assumed was his girlfriend, but later turned out to be the flakiest of his sisters, Ella. When they walked in, they were both laughing, and Alice, who was newly, sadly single, was immensely irritated. Typical. Here comes another happy, laughing, loving couple. Alice remembered how her eyes had met Nick's as he looked about the class for free spots, while Ella gazed reverently and weirdly at the ceiling, entranced for some reason by the ceiling fan. Nick had raised his bushy eyebrows questioningly
and Alice had smiled politely, thinking, "Yes, yes, fine, come and sit here, lovebirds, and let's make boring conversation." There had been another free spot at the front of the class. If her eyes hadn't met his, if she had looked down at the fish cakes recipe in front of her, or if Sophie had walked 2 centimeters to the left and therefore missed twisting her ankle in that pothole, or if they had decided to do the wine tasting course instead, which they very nearly did, then those 3 children would never have been born. Madison Love, Thomas Love, Olivia Love. 3 little individuals who already had their own personalities and quirks and stories. The moment Nick raised his hairy eyebrows in her direction, they all got their stamps of approval. Yes, 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 you will exist. Alice was filled with elation. It was amazing. Of course, 1 billion babies were born every second or something, so it wasn't that amazing, but still. Why weren't they just overcome with joy every time they looked at those kids? Why in the world were they divorcing? She said, "So Nick and I are fighting over custody of the children?" Such a grown-up, alien concept. Nick wants them with him half the time. We don't know how Nick thinks he can do it when he works such long hours. You've always been their primary caregiver, as they say. But it's all got... well, it's all turned out so nasty. I guess it's just the nature of divorce. But does Nick think... Alice was overwhelmed with hurt. Does he think I'm not a good mother? And was she a good mother? Elizabeth lifted her chin and her eyes flashed like the old Elizabeth. Well, if he thinks that, he's wrong, and we'll have 1 million witnesses ready to stand up in court and say otherwise. You're a great mother. Don't worry. He's not going to win. He hasn't got a chance. I don't know what he's trying to prove. It's just a power game for him, I think. It was confusing, because although it gave Alice pleasure to see Elizabeth angry on her behalf, at the same time she felt automatic loyalty for Nick. Elizabeth had always adored Nick. If Alice and Nick ever had an argument, Elizabeth took Nick's side. "He was a catch," she said. Elizabeth was getting herself worked up. "I mean, it's just so stupid. He doesn't know the first thing about looking after them. He doesn't cook. I doubt he's ever used the washing machine. He's always traveling, anyway. He's just so..." Alice held up her hand to make her stop. She said, "I expect it's just that he can't stand the idea of being a part-time dad, like his own father. He used to hate it when Roger came to take him and his sisters out. He said Roger always tried too hard, you can just imagine, and it was awkward and strange, and the girls squabbled and took advantage of his credit card. Whenever we go out to a restaurant and Nick sees a man alone with his children, he always says, 'Divorced dad,' and shudders. I mean, that's what he did. 10 years ago. She tried to get control of her voice. He wanted to be there every night for his children, and hear about what they did at school, and make breakfast with them on the weekend. He talked about that a lot. It was like he was going to make up for his own childhood, and I loved it when he talked like that because it was making up for our childhood too, and not having our dad around. He had such lovely, romantic ideas about how we'd be a family. Well, we both did. I can't believe. She couldn't talk anymore. Elizabeth came over and sat on the couch beside her. She hugged her awkwardly. "Maybe," she said tentatively, "maybe this memory loss is sort of a good thing, because it will help you see things more objectively without your mind being cluttered with everything that's happened over the last 10 years. And once you get your memory back, you'll still have a different perspective, and you and Nick will be able to work things out without all the fighting. What if it never comes back?" "Oh, of course it will come back. You're already remembering bits and pieces," said Elizabeth. "Maybe my old self has been sent from the past to stop the divorce," said Alice only half flippantly. "Maybe I won't get my memory back until I've done that." "Possibly," said Elizabeth too brightly. Then she paused and said, "Dominic seemed nice. Really nice." Alice thought of how she'd let Dominic kiss her on this very couch and felt suffused with guilt. She said, He is perfectly nice. He's just not Nick.
No, he's very different from Nick.
Now, what exactly did that mean? Should she be offended on Nick's behalf? Anyway, she wasn't going to have a conversation comparing their pros and cons as if they were competing boyfriends. Nick was her husband. She changed the subject instead. She said, "Well, speaking of men, I liked Ben."
"It's funny to hear you talk about him as if you've only just met him."
What did Ben mean when he said he'd been thinking about our discussion the other day? Alice knew there was something controversial about this topic. It was time to get to the bottom of whatever this thing was between her and Elizabeth. Elizabeth yawned and stretched.
"Do you want a glass of water?"
"No, thanks.
I'm really thirsty."
She stood up and went into the kitchen. Alice watched her go and wondered if she'd pretended not to have heard her. She came back with a glass of water and sat back down on the single couch in front of Alice.
"It's late," she said.
"Libby."
Elizabeth sighed. "On Thursday, the day before your accident, Ben came over to help you with some problem you were having with your car. Except apparently there wasn't really a problem at all. It was a little setup."
Good grief. What had she done? Alice sat up straight. She could feel her face flushing. Surely she hadn't made a move on her sister's husband. For one thing, the man was freakishly large. Had breaking up with Nick sent her over the edge?
"You gave him banana muffins straight out of the oven. He loves your banana muffins."
"Oh, my Lord."
"With lots of butter. I never let him have butter. He's got high cholesterol, you know. I mean, you're the health-conscious one."
She'd seduced her brother-in-law with butter. Alice's heart pounded.
"And then you gave him your little speech."
"Little speech?" Alice said faintly.
"Yes, your little speech about why we should stop IVF and adopt. You had brochures, application forms, website addresses. You'd done all this research."
Alice couldn't get her head around it for a few seconds. Her mind had been filled with horrific images of herself going upstairs to freshen up and appearing in red lingerie.
"Adoption," she repeated confusedly.
"Yes, you think we should pop over to a third world country like Angelina and Brad and help ourselves to a cute orphan."
"That was very presumptuous of me," said Alice sternly, weak with relief that she hadn't tried to seduce Ben.
"Meddlesome. Nosy." Then again, she thought, wasn't adoption actually a pretty good idea?
"Well," said Elizabeth, "I was angry. When Ben came home and told me, I rang you and we got into a big argument about it. You think it's time we faced reality."
"Did I really say that?"
"Yes."
"I'm sorry."
"I guess you meant well. It's just that you made me feel as if you thought I was stupid. As if you would never have let things get so far. As if you would never be so messy as to keep having miscarriage after miscarriage. As if, I don't know, as if I've been overly emotional about the whole thing."
"I'm sorry," said Alice again. "I'm really sorry."
"You don't even remember it," said Elizabeth. "Once you remember it, you'll feel differently. Anyway, I said some pretty nasty things to you."
"Like what?"
"I'm not saying them again. I didn't even mean them. This lets me off the hook."
They were silent for a few seconds. Alice said, "Are Angelina and Brad friends of yours?"
Elizabeth snorted. "Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. You've forgotten all your celebrity gossip, too."
"I thought Brad Pitt was engaged to Gwyneth Paltrow."
"Ancient history. He's married and divorced Jennifer Aniston since then. And Gwyneth has had a baby called Apple. I'm not kidding. Apple."
"Oh." Alice felt unaccountably sad for Brad and Gwyneth. They seemed happy in the photos.
"Everyone looks happy in photos."
"What about Bill and Hillary Clinton?" asked Alice. "Did they stay together?"
"You mean after the Lewinsky thing?" said Elizabeth.
"Yes, they did. I don't think anyone even thinks about that much anymore."
Alice looked at Elizabeth. "So," she said with wild abandon, "I take it you don't want to adopt a baby."
Elizabeth smiled a sick sort of smile. "I would have considered it years ago, but Ben couldn't stand the idea.
He's always been ideologically opposed to adoption because he's adopted himself, and his mother is difficult. He didn't have a great childhood. My charming mother-in-law told him that his real mother couldn't afford to keep him. So Ben saved up his money. He thought once he had $100, he could write to his real mum to tell her he could be self-supporting now, so could she please take him back. On his birthday, he always ran to the letterbox, thinking that maybe this year, out of the blue, his real mum might decide to send him a card. He thought his baby photos were ugly. He was a funny-looking baby, and he wondered if maybe his real mother hadn't liked the look of him when he was born. He always felt his parents wished they had chosen a smaller, smarter son. He'd spent his whole childhood keeping his room tidy, not saying much, feeling like a big clumsy visitor in his own home. It breaks my heart to think of it. When you were saying earlier that Nick wanted to be a good father to make up for his own father leaving, well, Ben was similar. He wanted his own biological child. He wanted to have someone who looked like him, who had the same eyes or whatever. And I was so looking forward to giving him that. I so badly wanted to give him that. Of course you did. So I was always very respectful of Ben's views on adoption. Yes, I can imagine. Elizabeth gave a wry half-smile. What? On Thursday, you told Ben that he needed to get over it.
Get over what?
Get over his problem with adoption. You said that plenty of people didn't get on with their biological parents, and that it was a lottery, but that any kid who got Ben and me as parents would hit the jackpot. Thank you, by the way. That was a nice thing to say.
That's okay.
At least you'd said one thing right. But Ben must not have appreciated me saying that.
Well, that's the thing. Yesterday when I came home from lunch, he said he'd been thinking about what you said, and he thinks you're right. We should adopt. He's all excited. He'd done all this research on the internet. Apparently, all I needed to say to him 5 years ago was, get over it. Silly old me. All that unnecessary tiptoeing around his traumatic childhood.
Alice tried to imagine herself telling that big grizzly man to get over it while she fed him banana muffins.
Banana muffins.
She wondered what recipe she used. Also, she must own a muffin tray. She had never had opinions about how Elizabeth should run her life, although Elizabeth had plenty of opinions about how Alice should run hers. That was fine because she was the big sister. It was her job to be the sensible, bossy one who did her tax returns on time, got her car serviced regularly and had a career, while Alice could be whimsical and hopeless and make fun of Elizabeth for her motivational posters of mountains and sunsets. Actually, now she thought about it, it had been Elizabeth who had bullied her into doing that Thai cooking course with Sophie instead of wasting her life moping over that sneering IT consultant. Now Alice was the one doing the bullying.
So if Ben is considering adoption now, isn't that maybe a good thing? She said hopefully.
No, it's not.
Elizabeth's voice became flinty. She sat up straight. Here we go, thought Alice.
It's not at all. You don't know what you're talking about, Alice.
But it's too late now. You don't seem to realize how long adoption takes, what you have to go through. You don't just order a kid online.
We're not Brad and Angelina.
We've got to jump through hoops and pay thousands of dollars, which we don't have. It takes years and years, and it's stressful. And things go wrong, and I don't have the energy for it. I've had enough. We'd be nearly 50 by the time we got a child. I'm too tired to start dealing with bureaucrats and trying to convince them why I'd make a good mother, and how much money we earn, and blah, blah, blah.
I don't know why you're suddenly taking this interest in my life, but you're too late.
I'm suddenly taking an interest? Alice was wounded, desperate to defend herself, except she had no facts at her disposal. She didn't believe it. She would never have not been interested in Elizabeth's life. Are you saying I haven't been interested before?
Elizabeth breathed out noisily, deflating like a balloon, and sank back in her chair.
Of course you have.
Well, why did you say it?
I don't know. Sometimes I felt it.
Look. I withdraw the comment. We're not in court.
I didn't even mean it. Anyway, you could probably say the same thing about me. I don't see the children as much as I did. I should have done more for you after Gina and after Nick. But you're always so, I don't know, busy, self-sufficient. She yawned. Just forget it. Alice looked down at her strange, wrinkled hands. What's gone wrong between us? She asked quietly. There was no answer. Alice looked up and saw that Elizabeth had closed her eyes and put her head back against the couch. She looked exhausted and sad. Finally, she spoke without opening her eyes. We really should go to bed. Chapter 19. It was 5:30 p.m., Sunday afternoon. In half an hour, Nick would be home with the children. Alice had a sick, excited feeling in her stomach, as if she were going on a first date. She'd been wearing a pretty floral dress and makeup, her hair all fluffy and motherly, when she decided that she was trying too hard. Presumably, she didn't normally dress up like a 1950s mother at a fancy dress party. So she'd run back upstairs and scrubbed off the makeup and pulled the dress over her head in mad panic. She'd found jeans and a white T-shirt and flattened her hair. No jewelry except for Nick's bracelet and her wedding ring, which she'd found at the back of a drawer together with Granny Love's engagement ring. It had been yet another fresh shock to find these symbols of her marriage carelessly tossed in with her underwear. She remembered when Nick had placed the wedding ring on her finger for the first time. Most grooms were clumsy at this point, grinning goofily, soft chuckles from the guests. But Nick had smoothly, tenderly slid it onto her finger in one go, his eyes locked on hers. She'd been proud. He was so dexterous. With this ring, I thee wed, until I thee divorce. She wondered why she hadn't given the awful engagement ring back. Wasn't the ring normally torn from the finger and thrown at the man's face in a fit of rage at some point during a divorce? She looked at herself in the bedroom mirror. This was much better, casual, unaffected, although her face looked pale and very old. She resisted an intense longing to go through that amazing dab-dab, slap-slap routine again that transformed her face. Surely she didn't normally wear makeup on a Sunday night at home. Earlier in the day, after Elizabeth and Ben had gone home, it had suddenly occurred to Alice that it was presumably her responsibility to feed those three children. She had called her mother and asked her what she should cook for dinner, saying she wanted to cook their favorite thing. Barb had spent a full 20 minutes discussing each child's dietary idiosyncrasies throughout their lives. Remember when Madison went through that vegetarian stage? And of course it would have to be at the same time that Tom was just refusing to eat any vegetable. Then Olivia couldn't decide whether she should only eat vegetables like Madison or refuse to eat vegetables like Tom. Oh, you were tearing your hair out every tea time. At last, after much changing of her mind, she'd finally settled on homemade hamburgers. I think you found a healthy recipe in your Heart Foundation recipe book. You were saying just the other week that you were sick to death of it, but the children can't get enough of it. I'm sure you remember that, don't you, darling? Because it was only last week. Alice had found the recipe book, and it had opened straight at the right food-splattered page. All the ingredients were in her amazingly well-stocked freezer and pantry. It seemed like there was enough there to feed hundreds of children. As she made the mince for the hamburgers, she realized she wasn't looking at the recipe book anymore. She seemed to know that now she grated in 2 carrots, 1 zucchini, now she added 2 eggs. Once it was ready, she had put the mince back in the fridge, defrosted rolls ready to be toasted, and made a green salad. Would the children eat a green salad? Who knew? She and Nick could eat it. He would stay for dinner, wouldn't he? He wouldn't just drop the children off and leave. But she had an awful feeling that was exactly what divorced parents did. She'd just have to ask him to please stay. Beg him, if necessary. She couldn't be left alone with the children. It wasn't safe. She didn't know the procedures. For example, did they bath themselves? Did she read them stories, sing them songs? When was bedtime, and how was it enforced? She went back downstairs in her jeans and looked around her gleaming, beautiful house. 2 cleaners had turned up at the door at midday, laden with mops and buckets,
asking how the party had gone as they plugged in vacuum cleaners. They'd scrubbed and polished while Alice wandered vaguely about, feeling embarrassed and not sure what she was meant to be doing. Should she help? Get out of the way? Supervise? Hide the valuables? She had her purse ready to give them however much they asked for, but there had been no request for money. They told her they'd see her on Thursday at the usual time and disappeared, waving cheerily. She'd closed the door behind them, breathed in the smell of furniture polish, and thought, I am a woman with a swimming pool, air conditioning, and cleaners. Now she looked about the kitchen, and her eyes fell on a rack of wine. She should have a bottle open and breathing for Nick. She selected a bottle, went to get a corkscrew, and realized that the bottle didn't have a cork. Instead, she unscrewed a normal bottle top. How funny. The smell of the wine hit her nostrils, and she found she was pouring herself a glass. She buried her nose in it. Part of her mind thought, what are you doing, you tosser? Another part thought, blackberries. The wine slid smoothly down her throat, and she wondered if she'd turned into an alcoholic. It wasn't even 6 o'clock. She'd never been much of a wine drinker. Yet drinking this wine felt right and familiar, even as it felt strange and wrong. Maybe that's why Nick had left her and wanted custody of the children. She'd become a drunk. Nobody knew except for Nick and her children. It was a terrible secret. Well, but couldn't she just get help? Join AA and follow those 12 steps? Never touch a drop again? She took another sip and tapped her fingers on the countertop. Soon she would see him, and then the mystery of all this would finally be solved. It wasn't logical, but she had a strong feeling that the moment she saw Nick's face, her entire memory would land back in her head, fully intact. Dominic had turned up again this afternoon. He had takeaway hot chocolates in a tray and tiny polenta cakes. She had a feeling they were her favorites and acted accordingly grateful. She'd been surprised by the pleasure she'd felt when she saw him standing at the door. Maybe it was because of his somewhat nervy demeanor. It made her feel like she was adored. Nick adored her, but she adored him back, so it was equal. Talking to Dominic made her feel as if every word she said was somehow amazing. How is your, memory today? He'd asked her politely, while they drank their hot chocolates and ate the cakes on the back veranda.
Oh, maybe a bit better, she said.
People like to think you were making progress when it came to health matters. Apparently Jasper was with his mother. She realized that Dominic must be a divorced dad. How strange it all was. Wouldn't it be a lot less messy if everyone just stayed with the people they married in the first place? That meant divorce was a shared interest. She'd had a moment of inspiration and said to him, "Have we ever talked about Nick? About why we separated?" He gave her an odd, sideways look. Yes. Aha! Would you mind giving me a quick summary of what I told you? She said this lightly, trying not to show how desperately she needed to know the answer. You don't remember anything about why you and Nick split up? He'd said slowly. No. I couldn't believe it. It was a total shock to me. The words spilled out of her mouth before she realized that they might be upsetting to someone who was hoping to start a relationship with her. He'd scratched hard at his nose. Well, obviously I don't know every detail. But, it seemed that he, Nick, was pretty much involved with his job. He was away a lot and he worked long hours, and so I think you said you just drifted apart. That's the way it happened. And, I guess maybe some sexual issues. You mentioned... He coughed loudly and stopped talking.
Sex? She'd talk to this man about sex? It was an unforgivable betrayal of Nick. And besides which, what issues could there have been relating to sex? They had a glorious, funny, tender, highly satisfying sex life. It was so embarrassing to hear the word sex coming out of Dominic's mouth. He was too nice. Too grown up and proper. Even now, when Alice was alone thinking about it, she felt her face become warm. Dominic had seemed embarrassed too.
He'd cleared his throat so many times, Alice had offered him a glass of water. And then he'd left soon after, telling her to take